Greetings to our audience and welcome to the Knowledge in Action podcast. We are coming to you from MSTCDC Arusha. This podcast is brought to you by MSTCDC in partnership with the Danida Fellowship Center. This partnership exists to engage and promote learning and dialogue around democracy and governance, stability and green transition. As we are talking to you now, we have gathered 29 fellows to study and learn, tool and retool themselves on matters of leadership so that they can be able to offer the kind of leadership that is required for the regional integration process. This week of the podcast, they are gathered to have a conversation about governance and politics, and the focus of the conversation is youth leadership for the Africa we want. I have a powerful panel that is going to be helping me execute this conversation. So before I proceed too far, I would like to just give them a chance to introduce themselves. And while they introduce themselves, they will all tell you why they are fit for this conversation, who they are, the country they come from, why they're fit for this conversation, and what they think about youth leadership for the Africa we want. In my immediate left, I have Dorcas, who's going to first introduce herself and tell her, what do you think about youth leadership for the Africa we want?
All right, thank you very much, Stella. My name is Dorcas Francis. I am a member of EAC Fellow 2023 First Cohort. Actually, I'm very amazed to be one among the youth participating in this fellow and actually in this discussion, because I'm one among the youth who are practicing active politics. And in leadership, I have to say that I have been doing a very great job of making sure that I become one of the young people who are check and balance and try to see the accountability of what the good governance is and what is my position on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Dorcas, what Dorcas is not telling you is that she's a very active member of Chadema Party in Tanzania, and she's an active mobilizer of young people to participate in decision-making in Tanzania. On her immediate left is another person representing South Sudan, and I'm going to let him introduce himself. David, please, if you could introduce yourself to my audience and let them know why you are in this conversation and what you think about youth leadership for the Africa we want.
Yes, thank you for this great opportunity. I would like to welcome each and everyone in this very important discussion. I'm by name called David Pitia from South Sudan. I'm engaged with youth initiative in my country, and I'm so very grateful to be part of this great event. I'm a first cohort of East Africa Youth Fellowship this year. So I'm very grateful to be part of this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. David Pitia is from South Sudan, and he's also very active in mobilizing young people to participate in decision-making and governance. And he's right at the center of providing leadership for those kinds of processes in South Sudan. We are hoping to convince him to provide that leadership even in the region. But before we proceed, I'm also going to allow my final guest to introduce herself. I have Faith at the very extreme left, who's going to introduce herself and tell us what she thinks of youth leadership for the Africa we want.
Oh, thank you so much, Stella. My name is Faith Moipopo. I'm a EAC Youth Fellow in 2023 First Cohort. And it's a great honor and pleasure to be here. I'm a leader, an influential leader. I hope to be the leader that the society wants. In the coming 10 years, in coming 3 years, I need the society to be impacted with what I have learned from this fellowship. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Faith. The Africa we want, the AU has a document that they developed in order to be able to cover the aspirations of the Africa we want. This document is called the Agenda 2063. This document is supposed to guide us in the direction that we should take as a continent in order to be able to achieve the dreams and the aspirations that we have as a continent. Hopefully this process was consultative enough for you to add your voice into it. But if you aren't able to add your voice into it, this is a good opportunity for you to find out, what does this document provide for us? What pillars does it stand on? What exactly does it say about you and where we are supposed to go, and how can you come on board in this conversation? Speaking specifically to the young people in this conversation, we would like to know how you can be able to participate in this space and even participate in the conversation about youth, about the Africa we want and where we want to go to. Before I proceed, I'm going to invite my guest Faith to just share with us some of the pillars that they were able to explore today. Like I have mentioned, the ESC Youth Fellowship is currently running at MSTCDC Arusha, which is also the home of the East Africa Community, who is a major partner in the convening of this East Africa Community Youth Fellowship, a fellowship also designed and developed in partnership with the Jakaya Mrisho Kikwete Foundation, the Julius Nyerere Leadership Center, and the Emerging Leaders Foundation. Let's hear from Faith what some of these pillars are.
Thank you so much. According to Agenda 2023, among the pillars, I will mention some of them. Among the pillars that we need to see or we need to work in, the first one be the integrated Africa, that we need Africa which has no boundaries. A person can move from Tanzania to Kenya with, like, we don't need visas for her movement or his movement, but we need the Africa that we can do the regional agriculture. Like we can be sharing. A person in Uganda can share with a person in South Sudan, or share business ideas with no boundaries, no visas. We don't need anything. We need that Africa to see that Africa, as how some of the European countries do right now. And we also need to see the Africa that there's gender equality, that the how a lady or a male is treated, like the ladies and males are treated equally. We need to see that Africa, the influential Africa, that everybody should wish to come to Africa and experience that. But also we need their quality education, education that everybody can access. When we say quality education, we need the practical education, not theoretical education. We need the, when a person goes to school, the society can benefit from what he or she has been studying to school. Let's say we need education where they teach us on maybe farming, they teach on tertiary. Yeah, so we need that kind of education, education that it doesn't matter where you are from, but you can access the quality education. But Africa that we need to see in the coming years, the Africa which is peaceful. We need peace. We need to see there like no tribal wars. We need the we need Africa that people can integrate peacefully. Like we need to see a person from Tanzania can marry from Kenya. We need to see a Kenyan marries in Congo. We need that Africa because let's take an example of Tanzania. It's easier for a person from Mbeya, I mean the Kusa tribe, to marry in Iringa from Hehe tribe. Yeah, and when they do this, I mean this is the relation that they are creating here. It's not easy for them to break that relationship because it's a bond. So we don't expect to see wars. We don't expect to see anything that's against the human rights in that. So we need to see that peaceful Africa. We need to see our cultures are being valued. Like to we have to we need Africa that appreciates its languages. We need people to speak their native languages. Like let's say we can find a single language that we can communicate. Like we Tanzanians speak Swahili. When you go to Kenya, they speak Swahili too. You go to Uganda, some of them speak Swahili. So we need a single language that we can be communicating with. But we need that Africa where we appreciate what's ours. Like how I said, we need to appreciate our cultures. We need to appreciate our norms and traditions. We need Africa which we appreciate our environmental sustainability. Like we have minerals, we have the beautiful scenery. We need to envy that and appreciate it. So we need to see that kind of Africa.
As you've heard from Faith, the Agenda 2063 has 7 aspirations. One of them is a prosperous Africa based on inclusive growth and sustainable development. It further aspires for an integrated continent, politically united and based on the ideals of Pan-Africanism and the vision of African Renaissance. It aims for an Africa of good governance, democracy, respect for human rights, justice, and the rule of law. It aims for a peaceful and secure Africa, aims for Africa with a strong cultural identity, common heritage, values, and ethics, aims for an Africa whose development is people-driven, relying on the potential offered by African people, especially its women and youth, caring for children, some of whom are represented on this table. And the final aspiration has got to do with an Africa that is strong, united, resilient, and influential global player in the partners. You have all been going through sessions of training. Last week, you went through a session on self-management. This week, You went through, you've been going through a session on governance and politics, and you've been discussing the question of democracy. You've been discussing the question about the Africa we want. You've been discussing the question of governance and what has happened to our nations. As a matter of fact, on the first day you discussed unconstitutional government, change of government. So David, let me bring you into the conversation. Is Africa one of those continents that is promoting peace and stability?
Yeah, absolutely. Africa is one of the continents that promote peace and security, in fact. Simply because there is many treaties they come up with. Example, we have a silencing gun by 2020. This is the agenda that was being set by between 2018 2019. There is that sense of coming with a new agenda, silencing gun in Africa. So which means this will indicate definitely Africa has that desire of creating a lasting peace in Africa. So not just that, but it's looking on the aspect of inclusivity, whereby all head of state who have been in Africa Union to start forward with the agenda to promote at the local level. For example, like if country will start the initiative at its level, whereby the EU or the AU at the level, they will just supervise the movement on how the implementation of the process going. So this will bring me to the saying Africa has that agenda,
mm-hmm.
and currently they are working on it. So what is needed? There is need for the inclusivity on that agenda. Because some people, for example, Africa or some example, youth leadership, they left the agenda or the inspiration to the continent without backing the idea. So I'm looking from the aspect whereby if the young Africa leaders, for example, young leaders, can come up with an initiative on how to start disseminating information on how we, the Africa young leaders, can start announcing the idea of demilitarization, and also not just demilitarization, but also silencing the gun.
But even as
in
you
order
speak,
to
even
achieve the vision.
Even as you speak about demilitarization, let me be the devil's advocate. Mm. Yesterday, you had extensive conversations about unconstitutional change of government, and you had an opportunity to analyze the coup d'etats in Mali, in Niger, in Burkina Faso. And apart from that, you also had a chance to analyze some of the even older coup d'etats from Burundi, for example. And in the conversations from the very first day when Dr. Kagoro was speaking to us, you did talk about, you did have a conversation about some of the very old coup d'etats and look at an analysis of how many coup d'etats happened right after independence, starting from Egypt. As we talk about demilitarization, as we talk about peace, some of those countries may not necessarily be in the most peaceful state right now. So is there any pending work that needs to be done to promote the peace and stability that we aspire for in the Africa we want?
Yeah, definitely. I think there is need for another initiative to be initiated, because Africa continent is one of the continents experienced a lot of coup, as Dr. said during the lecture. But I'm looking from whereby we need to start initiative, you know? We cannot able to silence guns, or we cannot able to the system of changing the government through military rule. It will not be a kind of a government that people want. But I'm looking from the aspect whereby if we can start practicing democracy, because looking at the aspect, democracy is one of the system whereby we can have a peaceful transformation or peaceful transfer of power from one party to another party. So I think it will be the best idea. But since Africa is being recorded, having a higher record of military coup, I think there is need to come up with another idea on how to mitigate such idea of coup. Because currently, most of the young people in Africa, some of them start becoming frustrated. For example, like, for how long we're going to be under the leadership of Mr. Swanso? For how long we are going to suffer under this economic crisis? For how long we going to suffer under this bad leadership or bad governance? So this will bring in the sense whereby we need to start engaging young people, because we do believe young people are the resource people in the country, and not just a resource, but a backbone of every country.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for us to realize the agenda, in order for us to realize peace and security in Africa, I think we need to engage young people. After engaging young people, we need to give them a right knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a right knowledge, but a right attitude toward the leadership.
I hear David saying that there are certain things that we need to address in order to avoid the unconstitutional change of government. There are certain things that we need to correct in order to stop the coup d'etats or the manifestation of coup d'etats in the continent. And I hear you saying one of those is democracy, promoting a democracy that gives people their voice to choose their leader and ensuring that then once they choose their leader, the leaders serve the people in such a way that the economy and the social life in the country is actually reflected in the democracy that they're trying to promote. And so I want to bring Dorcas into the conversation. Dorcas Aspiration One is about dignity. It's about dignity, it's about sustainable livelihoods, and Aspiration Six talks about an Africa whose development is people-driven. Could you please just help the audience understand what are some of these things that cause countries to precipitate, for example, into unconstitutional change of government? And even if they haven't had coups, what is this that causes them to get to that place of disgruntlement and they want to change government without using the rightful and constitutional means?
Thank you very much, Stella. Actually, every human being has got its own, have got needs. Those needs actually will lead a person to do something. And when we are talking about dignity, there is where the human rights can come across. Because when you're talking about dignity, first of all, you have to talk about what gives the person that humanity. Because when a person goes through these hardships in life, for example, hunger, and other problems, it will lead a person to go to what we call it a cross line, like the end of tolerance. So this has already has been one of the causes to this coup d'etat in Africa, which has been caused a lot of problems, especially for women and young people. So what I had to say on this is people who are asking to serve and who are leaders, they have to make sure that they maintain that dignity of people. After that, they will have to know that these people, when they are fed up, they will come and introduce these coup d'etats.
Thank you very much, Dorcas. I need to push this just a little bit further with you. We are talking about ensuring that as citizens, we have a pulse, and as leaders, we have a pulse of the citizen. We understand where we have pushed them beyond their ability to tolerate suffering in our societies, to avoid unconstitutional change of government, to avoid coup d'etats and the revolutions that we have seen in the continent. And I think I also hear you saying that this should be done in the spirit of delivering Aspiration 1 and 6, dignity and people-driven development. Here's a question I want to ask. Is it that our systems of government have failed to deliver this to our people? Are there ways in which maybe we need to tweak democracy so that it provides an opportunity for people to elect the leader they aspire to have? You have been participating actively in a political party. I don't know whether your political party has been getting what they want throughout all the elections, but in a study of the East Africa community and what happens, what then needs to happen for this democracy to make sense socially and economically in our region?
First of all, we have to understand that whenever we are going for these elections, people create manifestos. This tells people exactly what are they going to deliver. This is something we have to make it be as an examine for people. Like, if you deliver this, we are going to give you power. But unfortunately, or to some extent, some of the things have not been attained yet. So this have been led to people come to realize, like, are we electing leaders so that they can give the development we require? Because on the Goal 6, we are talking about people-driven development. If that people-driven development has not attained, it may lead to very big problems. And when we are talking about democracy and whatever and all the pillars, of which one among them is a free and fair election, we have experienced different experiences in East Africa and in Africa in general. But whatever we are discussing about free and fair election or the electoral process, because election is a process, what is the role youth play in it? Yes, we will be keeping on complaining about this free and fair election. Yes, to some of the countries, they have never been there, because we see it, because in this election, we have seen observers from EU, from EAC, and other organizations. They have been monitoring elections, and they normally come up with reports, what has been happening in Tanzania, what has been happening in Kenya, Uganda, and other countries. But those are the things or the reports on the papers. What exactly is happening on the ground? The story might be different, but human is supposed now to bring a good story out of it. Because what we are looking for is the essence of democracy, the real practice of the democracy. Actually, as we are talking about the Africa we want, and as young people, actually, I would like to say we have to participate in the electoral process. Because we have been leaving behind, even on the process when we are registering to vote. We do not do follow-ups on those things. Because when you are talking about rigging the elections, when you are talking about someone has been stolen votes, how? You have to explain it. But because of this, the whole entire process, like it's election process, are we doing follow-ups on the registering ourselves? Are we appearing on the polling stations? Do we having agents on it? Okay, yes, we have voted. What really happened? How did they stole our votes? Do people really elected the person they want? Because the definition of democracy is the government or power to people by the people. The people themselves are the ones who are supposed to require the leader they want. Because what I have to tell you, Stella, because I've been participating in election, and actually for my position, I've been running like this local government election. I see how are we filling the forms. I see all the process from the ground, from the field. What I have to tell you, many citizens in Africa, they have let this election thing to the politicians, to those people who are vying for position. They will tell you only the politicians will come or the aspiring leaders will come and say the ruling party have stolen votes from us. They have done this and this. But the people tell you this is the business of the politicians, because we really need to know exactly the definition of the democracy. What I have to say on this matter now, African people should take hands that this is our decision. If you are coming as you have stolen votes from us, and man, we didn't choose you. You won't lead us. Because we are the ones who are having the power to choose you. We have the power to put you in power. I think it's high time now in Africa, the citizen, the centered, the development is for the centered people, right? They have to be the ones now to say we have elected this person and this person can lead us. I think that will be the solution, and not to leave these things to political parties, leaders, and CSOs and NGOs. Thank you.
There you have it from Dorcas. She's basically saying we have to participate in politics, we have to participate in building our democracies, and we must hold those that we give our power to exercise accountable for this. I want to come back to you, Faith. Aspiration 6 talks about people-driven development, but then it specifically mentions certain groups that must be brought on board, and it advises us to rely on their potential. Women and youth, and of course, considering the care for children. What is the risk of running governments or countries where we do not include the interests of women and youth?
Thank you so much, Stella. I think we youth are the coming, we are the generation. Let me say not we are the coming generation, but we are the generation. We are the ones to make the Africa that we want. We are the persons who we can do what we think is good for either this generation or the coming generation. What I believe is a woman or a girl, let me say in educating a girl child, yeah, because we believe that when a girl holds onto something, she will mean the business, not as men. Mm-hmm. So that's why we insist on educating female child, girl child, and empowering women. And as you know, most our men, yeah, most of the boys or men, most of them, even when they impregnate a girl, they leave them behind. So that the business remains to a girl. So I think there is a need of empowering girl child or empowering women for the betterment of the coming generation. Let me talk about the youth most. Because as what I wanted to make the society know is there is a need of empowering youth, because the coming generation depends on us or is on our hand. As we have been told from the previous session that whenever we speak of, let's say democracy is giving somebody a future. Let the young generation have future. So when we speak of the future, we need to see the good governance, who to implement the good governance. It's we. We need accountability and we need transparency. Who has to make the government be open or speak what's right? Because we are educated for the society to know the importance or benefits of what we are learning. So because when I leave this place and go back to my home, I mean the place where I'm working, I need the youth to learn from me. When the education that I have attained from this place has to make the positive change to where I am going. So I think there is a reason of empowering the youth more than women.
Thank God you're mentioning about the ESC Youth Fellowship and the lessons and the education that you've been getting through this process. A fellowship that is brought to you as a partnership between critical partners, the East Africa Community, the Danida Fellowship Center as a financing partner, the Jakaya Mrisho Kikwete Foundation, the Julius Nyerere Leadership Center, and the Emerging Leaders Foundation, and of course with the generous support of the Swiss government. And in this fellowship, we have had a lot of time to just go through self-leadership and self-management as a tool for leading others. We have further had a lot of conversations about identity from the very first lecture that was delivered during the start of the political governance and politics class about identity. Who do the youth of this continent need to be for them to offer the kind of leadership we need for the Africa we want?
Actually, for we youth, we need to learn first how to lead ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you have to understand, who are you? What will the society benefit from you? Why are you here? Or why are you in a certain position that you are right now? So first we need to understand who are we. We need to lead ourselves first, because as leaders, leading is a judgmental call. That the society might throw a lot of things onto you, but the power of the leadership that is in you will depend on how you respond to that thing. We need to be the youth that understand. First, we need to understand that we are different in the way we think, the way we judge, and the way we take actions to things. By understanding that, it's easy, for example, me, I'm a leader, for it will be easy for me to understand the society that I'm leading. So that will make it easy for I to perform the duty that I'm doing. First, I need to understand the society that I'm working with. But I need to understand myself. Like I got to know that I'm an introvert, the thing that I didn't know at first. So by knowing that I'm an introvert, I'm kind of structured. Yeah, so I will need to understand the society that I am in. But I think I have to be the advocate for, transparency. Because we need that transparency. We need people to be open. We need to know what's going on. We need to know why we are still developing. We are not developed the country. We need to know why do we need peace. Yeah.
David, I want to bring you into this conversation. Aspiration 5 speaks about a common cultural identity for Africans. It speaks about common heritage, values, and ethics. And we have been spending a lot of time examining who the fellows are as leaders and who they need to become to offer the kind of leadership needed for the Africa we want. Do you think we are at the place where we can safely say we know ourselves and we love ourselves as a continent, or there's a bit of work that we need to do as citizens of this continent to be able to take care of what we have been given to be custodians over?
Thank you very much for this great question concerning the identity and the culture of Africa. In fact, there is a say, we say, a community without a culture is not a community. A person without identity is not a person. Which means it is very important for Africa to have that identity. And in fact, during this session that we had last week, it's really try to identify who are we. And that identity came through the aspect of redefining ourselves. You know, sometimes you will be a young person, you don't know who are you exactly. Especially looking from the inner part of you. But definitely, since we got the lectures and we try to identify who are we and the nature and the characters we have, definitely it has that. So to build the identity and the culture of Africa, we have that culture. Africa has a culture, and having so many cultures. and Africa having an identity. So based on that identity, it is where we African, we need to start building ourselves. Building ourselves on that identity and try to identify ourselves in our culture. You know, as I say, a culture, a community without a culture is not a community.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a need for initiative at the level of the communities in Africa to start initiating their cultural norms and values. We need to appreciate our culture.
And David, I'm going to ask you to tell our audience, what would that look like for them to be able to show that they appreciate their cultural identity? What are some of those things, simple things that they can start doing?
Thank you. Because, for example, in South Sudan, we have a dressing code. Dressing code, it will be one of the best aspects to identify who are you, by the way. Because in Africa nowadays, we have a dressing code that differ from country to countries. When you see a Kenyan person, you will find their dressing code or their culture is different. When you go to Tanzania, they have different dress. When you go to South Sudan, when you go to all the countries are different. So there is need for us, as for example, this fellowship, it is a great opportunity whereby we can able to identify our cultures. Like, for example, having a one day season on culture. For example, we're gonna dance our cultures I'm from South Sudan. I'll be having that culture of South Sudan, try to introduce to other followers from other countries, so that we can able to learn the culture of South Sudan. The same with the Kenya, Uganda, and the DRC and Burundi. This is how we try to identify our culture and we promote the culture. You know, the moment we promote the culture, it will attract other people to love our culture. So the promotion will erupt through us and nobody will come and promote our culture. And this is our audience. I would like to make it clear. Nobody will promote your culture except you yourself to promote your culture. So when we meet in gathering, if there is a session, if there is a fellowship in Tanzania or in somewhere else in Africa, we need to exercise that culture. And we need to celebrate and we need to have that moment so that we can able to keep learning our cultures and having that conversation in our mind.
Dr. Kagoro spoke about where Africans started from as far as dressing is concerned. And he was talking about the fact that when the colonizer came to Africa, they found us walking naked and we had no embarrassment about walking naked. We had skirts to cover the necessary place and the rest of the bodies were out there. Nobody even attempted to use that as an excuse to rape the other. We have now borrowed a culture of dressing up and covering up, and we call it our culture and use it to discriminate other people who do not dress the way we do. Are we using the right processes to be able to transfer knowledge about what is valuable to us as far as dressing is concerned, as far as cuisine and the food we value is concerned, as far as basically what our cultural heritage is concerned? Or do we need to go back to the drawing board and rethink and decide what we are going to adopt as a common culture as aspired by Aspiration 5?
Thank you very much, Stella. And actually, you have reminded me of something very, very important and very crucial. 2016, 2017, Louis Vuitton fashion show. They showcased Maasai Shuka. They call it Safari, you know. And then you come to the most expensive fashion show in the world, Victoria's Secret. They showcased Maasai beads. But we are here. We see. We pass through. We just see them outside, like in Arusha and all this, the Northern Soccer Safari, Stella Twadas Nation. You only see them, but we do not take care of them. Then you come to the world stage, you are like, is this for real? You know, I can tell you, I was watching, I was like, hey, so this is Maasai Shuka, and it's called Safari. And you know, these big brands in the world are sold very expensive. Very, very expensive. We do not value our own. But some people come and see the difference and they go debate these things on their countries. But for me, what I have to say, actually, I agree with you. We have to go back to the drawing board. We have to appreciate our very own. We have seen kitenge being worn in America, in other countries as well. What are we doing? I think it's high time now we have to be bragging about what we have. Starting from the food, the organic food is so very expensive in supermarkets, in the Europe, in other countries. Africa is blessed. We have arable land. for agriculture. We're having each and everything we can solve. But what are we doing is the brainwash kind of thing that I can't wake up in the morning, boil my cassava, drink with my green tea at home, and I become very healthy. Now I have to take something off, which sometimes, you know, when you watch all these cuisines, you know, you can just eat a bread, and because the way it has been presented on a plate, you find it something, oh, very nice. While you can do everything at home. I had to tell you as well, you know, for example, in Tanzania, especially from the coastal land, though they are rich in making food, I can say. For here, like we say, in these apart from the north, apart from the coastal region, the other part people can just cook ugali, right? And these are vegetables and so. But in the coastal region, there is where you can find banana. It's having 10 dishes on its own presentation. What we have to do right now, start from our food, our cuisine, right? Then comes to our dressing style. Actually, always I attend these big tourism, international tourism expos. I see how things are done. I see how people value our very own. Actually, I'm telling people, you know what? I even established a program. I had to tell you this. I established a program, more of a project. I call it fashion tourism. Why fashion tourism? We normally talk about tourism on the part of visiting safaris and national parks, but we have to now go back and see, apart from these safaris, this cultural creative tourism, what are we doing with them, and shopping tourism. Then from there we can maintain our cultural heritage. Thank you.
Fashion tourism, what are you eating? I happen to have visited Zanzibar, and there's a place called Forodhani, and the only tourism you do at Forodhani is eating cuisine from the Zanzibari people. We have been growing organic food for the longest time as a continent, and we have been accessing it free of charge. Most of the times, most of the vegetables we consume grow naturally as a result of dropping seed. But we are quickly adopting other cuisine because we do not value our identity and what we associate with. Are we asking ourselves questions about the decisions then we make about our food, the decisions we make about what we wear, how expensive or how cheap it is? Are we asking ourselves about the questions about how we have adopted other ways that make life very expensive for us? Are we asking ourselves the question about our heritage and whether we're going to maintain it when we continue adopting ways that we have not considered in comparison to some of our traditional ways that had a lot of meaning, a lot of relevance to how we live and the rules that we live by? What values have we adopted? What do we believe in even as we move on? And who better to carry that assignment than those who are going to be inheriting the governance of our continent, the young people? I want to go around the table to just see from my guests, what do they have to say about the role that the youth need to carry out in driving these aspirations? Because the people who sat down to think and design these aspirations are going to be working on them for a very limited amount of time. But the young people are going to be living with and working on these aspirations for a very long time. Let's hear what role the youth have to play. Let me start with you, Faith. What role do you think the youth have to play in driving these 7 aspirations?
Actually, we youth, we have to appreciate first what we have. Mm-hmm. Then after appreciating what we have, we will learn to love what we need to have. Then by doing so, I think we can appreciate, we can learn how to value things. We will learn how to protect what we have. Like, okay, when we speak of like right now, we are learning on appreciating our culture. I think youth have to learn on how to appreciate what we have, and learn how to love what we have. And by doing so, first, we will attract more people, because by wearing our cultural attires or our national attires, by speaking the language that we speak, the national languages, or by speaking our native languages. Actually, Stella, what you didn't know about me, I can't speak my mother tongue. Yeah, I can't do that. But I'm planning
cultural heritage.
Yeah, but I'm planning on learning. Yeah, and why I can't speak that? Because they are not speaking it at home. So maybe when I just visit my grandpa, that's when I will hear some words like Ugonile, VP, Ugonile is like, how are you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think I have to learn, and we youth have to learn and appreciate that. Because we are planning on building the new Africa, new continent. We need that, and we really do, because by loving first or loving what we have can promote first our continent, not just the East African community, but speaking of East African community, I mean, like, I'm speaking of Africa at large, because as you can see, some, like, the countries, I mean, the boundaries of our countries is close to another country. Mm-hmm. So whenever that there is a war in, let's say, Congo, that means I'm also affected, because maybe I was once sending my maize or vegetables to Congo, but now there is war, I can't do business anymore. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we need to love one another. Mm-hmm. At the same way that we love ourselves. Let's take our friends or the neighboring country's problem or the African country problem as our own problem. That's where we will move forward.
I hear Faith saying, love ourselves. Let us be united so aspiration one is not misplaced. Let us be united. Let us work on a common agenda. I also hear her saying solidarity is key. That we have to support each other. When there's trouble at our neighbor's home, it then means that this trouble is slowly coming our way and we must start preparing. David, how should the young people be even as they proceed?
Yeah, thank you very much for this question. I'm looking from the aspect whereby our leaders done their part.
Mm-hmm.
They draft the agenda. The seven pillars, and the seven pillars try to create to us a picture on how we demand or on how we look Africa we want in the nearest future. I'm looking whereby the leaders or the young leaders now, there is need for us to have to be a visionary leaders.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is very important to you, because our leaders done their part. And now remember, it is us to implement the policy. They draft the policy, but it is us to implement. So we need to have a visionary leader. We must be a visionary leader. One, a leader that conceived the future. Yes, you will be a leader, but without having a future plan, you will not be able to achieve what you want. But we need to conceive a future, for example, looking at the aspect of seven aspirations. And that seven aspirations, we need to see on the future how we start translate it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Because we cannot able to achieve it just when we keep telling about the seven expressions.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to see on how to start implementing it on the ground. Translate to the ground, doing it small by small in order to achieve what it. Because looking at that future leader, that having a vision, number one, that particular person will have that sense of analyzing the current situation. The current situation comparing or predict to the future. And that prediction will come through translating the vision on the ground. Since it is a process, but you need to translate it. After you translate it, then you will see the action of that particular vision that you have. So I think that is what currently youth must have it on their mind. A future leader that conceived the future. Yeah.
David says a visionary leader, a leader who can see the bigger picture, a leader who can plan effectively on how to execute. And he's reminding us that our forefathers, he's reminding us that our current leaders have sat down, thought through, and come together and put together the Agenda 2063. It is now our job to design the pathways through which we are going to come to the place where we'll achieve these goals. Let's hear from Dorcas. What do the youth need to do? Where do they need to be? What kind of people do they need to be to deliver the Africa we want?
Actually, youth have to be a good example in each and whatever things we do. We say people will imitate what you do, not what you say. So as young people, first of all, because you're talking about Africa integration, we have to be one. A good thing currently we have in technology, which has helped us to, you know, communicate and also get us to get information about what is happening in other countries across the continent. So actually, I advocate for youth to build this integration, communicate. I can give example. I have been seeing different programs across, then I just check, oh, so this youth is participating in this. I can DM them, I can WhatsApp them, and it has been very helpful. There are people who have been communicating for 5 years and we have never even met, but we come across and we know our issues in Africa as youth. Also, because we are supposed to play our role as young people, we have to showcase our talents and creativity. Because we are talking about unemployment, we are talking about these problems which are going on in Africa, we have to use whatever we have, the means. If it's a technology, coming up with a solution, apps which solve particular solution, if it's health, if it's education, and so and so. But apart from that, as young people as well, I also advocate to do good in whatever sector we are in, because not everyone can do the same thing. Not everyone can be a doctor, but as a young person, you are a doctor, play your role very well. You are a person in politics, play your role as a young person very well. You should be principled, because in these leadership spaces, sometimes young people do not have their own standings. So I advocate for youth to have their own standings, to become very principled. And above all, I have to advocate on how are we going to say to bring back to the community. When you visited the University of Dar es Salaam or the new library, there are words quoted from Mwalimu Nyerere that your village has sent you to attain education, the knowledge you have. If you won't return it to the society, to the community, you are a traitor. Yes, you are a traitor. You're no longer a person who deserves to stay in a society, in a community. So whatever education we have to take it back to the society. We shouldn't be the one to point fingers now, leaving our culture, trying to imitate and become other people, rather than we have to ensure that we are creating a sustainable development in our countries and communities. Thank you.
There you have it. Dorcas says that you need to be innovative and creative. She says that we need to be people who appreciate the opportunities that come into our hands. And when we get opportunities, we must take the responsibility to ensure that the knowledge, the information, the resources we get are distributed to other people who don't have access to them. I also hear Dorcas saying that we have to be responsible about those resources when they become available to us, and that we must commit ourselves to provide the kind of leadership that is required for the Africa we want. My speakers have elaborately and eloquently told you what their thoughts are about what you should do as a young person, who you should be as a young person to be able to influence Agenda 2063. This conversation is far from over. There's plenty more that needs to be discussed under this topic. We probably are going to come back to you with another podcast that is going to engage this topic a little bit more. But for now, that is all the time we have to have a conversation about youth leadership for the Africa we want. Remember the challenge from David that our leaders have already designed the framework. It is our job to think through innovatively how we are going to be able to send this message out to the rest of the continent, send this message out to all the youth, and design pathways in which we are going to use to achieve those goals. I also want to remind you the words of Dorcas, where she has told us that we now have an advantage as young people. We have more international friends, more international access because of the use of social media and social media platforms. We have more spaces to have conversations and more central resources where we can go and find information about the Africa we want, about the regional integration process, about everything that we need to know about what's going on in our governance system. And we need to take advantage of those resources to do more than Nelson Mandela did with just pen and paper, where he needed to send letters over days to even communicate to a neighbor in another country. I will also leave you with the challenge from Faith that solidarity is extremely important. We must ensure that we are watching what is happening in the neighborhood, that we have the bigger picture, as David has mentioned, and consistently provide solidarity for the different situations that we have, consistently provide ideas and solutions for the problems that we face, because we are the answers to the problems that we have. The Swahili say, ukimwona mwenzako ananyolewa, na wewe tia kichwa chako maji, which means if you see your neighbor or your friend undergoing the traditional shaving that involves the use of soap and water, applied and a razor, or in present time, the use of cream for shaving, even you go and prepare and put water on your head because you're just about to be shaved. Do not ignore the struggle in your neighbor's home. That's all we have for today. This is the Knowledge in Action podcast brought to you by MSTCDC and the Danida Fellowship Center. We are glad we could have you today.